You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back into the Locked On Orioles podcast. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. On today's episode, wanted to, first of all, before the break, kind of address and look into the situation that is continuing to go on with the Chicago White Sox and their new manager, Tony La Russa, and the news that continues to come out and why this is just continuing to be a bad look for the Chicago White Sox and their future for a team that looked like it had a lot of promise. And then coming up after the break, we are going to continue our series counting down the Orioles' top 10 moves of the last decade. If you missed it yesterday, back on Tuesday, we started this countdown by giving you a couple of moves that just missed out on the top 10. We talked about signing Delmon Young, trading for Mark Reynolds, and claiming Hanser Alberto on waivers. And then we talked about the number 10 move of the last decade. That was the Orioles claiming Steve Pierce off of waivers back in September of 2012, and kind of broke down Pierce's great 5 years with the Orioles and kind of the legend that he will hold in Baltimore. That was on yesterday's episode, back on Tuesday, episode number 170, if you want to go check that one out. But on today's pod, we are going to talk about the number 9 transaction on this list. And it is another guy and another move that was made in 2012, another guy who was a part of the 2012 Orioles team. But this guy definitely had a much bigger role on the 2012 Orioles. Although he was only an Oriole for a couple years, I think a lot of O's fans have a soft place in their heart for this outfielder who we will talk about after the break. But first, Tony La Russa. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week when the White Sox, it had been rumored for a while, but they did announce that Tony La Russa, 76 years old, would be their new manager after letting go of Rick Renteria, who led the team back to the playoffs this year and was one of the finalists for AL Manager of the Year. That vote coming down on Tuesday night. He did not win. Kevin Cash took it in the AL with the Rays, and then Don Mattingly of the Marlins won the award in the National League. But Renteria was one of the finalists for Manager of the Year, and the White Sox parted ways with him in favor of Tony La Russa. And most of the talk about it has been that owner Jerry Reinsdorf, who let La Russa walk from the White Sox back in the 80s, early in his managerial career, always felt like it was a big mistake of his. And Reinsdorf essentially went rogue without the backing of a lot of the people in his organization and decided to hire Tony La Russa. And, you know, we know how the conversation went before anything this week. This was the conversation for the last 2 weeks. It's a bad hiring. You have one of the most young and exciting teams in baseball right now. And frankly, you know, this team with led by Tim Anderson, one of the most exciting young players. And you've got Luis Robert, who finished second in AL Rookie of the Year voting this year. You've got guys like Yoan Moncada, Eloy Jimenez. You know, you got pitchers like Lucas Giolito, and all these guys who have just been fantastic. They bring the energy for this White Sox team, and it's just a fun team to watch. You flip it over to the other side, bringing in Tony La Russa, who has not been that kind of manager. You know, definitely the age factor is a difference. You know, can he connect with this younger generation of baseball players on the White Sox? You've had his comments speaking out against players who used their voice for activism, kneeling during the anthem, speaking out against people like Colin Kaepernick a few years ago. And, you know, for La Russa, the question became, how is this a fit at all for any team right now, but especially the Chicago White Sox team? And that question continued to be asked, and a lot of people were not happy with the move. Frankly, most White Sox fans that I saw were not happy with the move. And obviously most baseball fans in general, you know, with less of an emotional connection to the team, but we're not happy that for baseball in general and for the guys like Tim Anderson, we're not happy with that. And it's been reported that La Russa has still not reached out to Tim Anderson, the leader of his team, one of the best players on his team, and has still not reached out to him. It's been over a week now. But this week, the story took a different turn with it being reported that Tony La Russa had gotten a DUI back in February, and that the White Sox knew about it before hiring La Russa. And this is the second one of his career. He got one back in 2007 when he was still the manager of the Cardinals. And this time there were more details that came out about it. Reporting, great reporting by ESPN's Jeff Passan on this one, saying that when La Russa was being arrested, he was getting into the car and, you know, basically saying, here's my ring. You know, I'm a Hall of Famer in baseball. I'm a Hall of Fame manager. Essentially, do you know who you're dealing with? And it's not a great look for Tony La Russa. And then more information comes out that, you know, La Russa, he said, do you see my ring? I'm a Hall of Famer baseball person. First of all, what does that even mean? I'm a Hall of Famer baseball person. I'm legit. I'm a Hall of Famer, brother. And then he says, with his blood alcohol content over the legal limit, what makes you think I don't have control of my facilities? I'm a Hall of Famer baseball person. And for Tony La Russa, you know, one DUI, now two DUIs, you know, this is a serious issue. I mean, more than 10,000 people died in alcohol-impaired driving crashes in each of the last few years. And Tony La Russa could have put someone's life in danger driving under the influence. And that, frankly, is enough to at least move away from a candidate that already doesn't fit this team and really shouldn't be getting a managerial job over a lot of candidates who are frankly, a lot better fit, not just for the White Sox, but for Major League Baseball right now in general. And it seems like the White Sox, you know, reports coming out that despite all this, he is not in danger of losing this job that he just got last week. And it just seems like the White Sox have put themselves into a bad hole. I would assume that more than 50% of the people who work in that organization do not want Tony La Russa as their manager, probably felt that way before this and now feel that much, much stronger. And it just feels like the right move for the White Sox is to move on from Tony La Russa. You know, there'll be jokes about how short of a time it was for him as the White Sox manager, but this is a PR nightmare. This is a nightmare for the team, the relations between the manager and the players, and for Tony La Russa. I mean, the situations he continues to put himself in, the choices he continues to make to drive under the influence are terrible choices. And frankly, he doesn't deserve this managerial job for a multitude of reasons. And so the White Sox need to fire him, but we're going to find out, you know, how much does Jerry Reinsdorf really not care about all that stuff and just want to, I don't know, make up for some failure he thought he made 30 plus years ago. And if he does continue to manage this team, and if Tony La Russa is the White Sox manager on opening day in 2021, really, really bad look for a really, really likable team. And I could see this really blowing up in the face of the White Sox. Marcus Stroman, of course, one of the top free agent pitchers on the market this year, you know, a couple of tweets today basically saying, you know, if Tony La Russa is the manager, I'm not signing with the White Sox. And that would have been a really good fit right there. You know, Stroman fitting in with that team, a team that really needs to bolster its starting pitching staff behind Lucas Giolito to really get to the next level, a team that was already in the playoffs, but with a better rotation becomes a World Series contender. They're definitely going to be spending on a starting pitcher this offseason. Stroman could have been that guy, and he basically said, no, I'm not playing for that guy, especially after this. And so does it continue to turn away more free agents and more fans from this team? And the White Sox really need to just get rid of him at this point. And it's unbelievable that he was not only chosen, but is still, as we sit here today, the manager of the White Sox. But, you know, if you want more coverage on that, check out Locked On White Sox. We had Herb Lawrence, the host of Locked On White Sox, on the podcast last week. He was on to talk about Yoimer Sanchez, whom the Orioles claimed off of waivers from the Sox last week. But, you know, we did talk briefly about the La Russa situation right at the end of that. So you can go back last Tuesday's episode to check that one out. But his podcast, really a good one if you want more information there. But just bad look all around for the Chicago White Sox. But we'll get back to Orioles talk here. And we are continuing this countdown of the top 10 transactions and moves the Orioles have made in the last decade. you know, kind of as we get towards the meaty part of the offseason, the Orioles start to make some moves here in late November. Wanted to look back on some of the best ones they've made from 2010 through 2019. So yesterday we started the list. Number 10 was the Orioles claiming Steve Pierce off of waivers from the Yankees in September of 2012. Number 9 on the list coming up next, and it's another move they made in 2012 and one that made a lot of Orioles fans pretty happy when it was all said and done, and a guy that is universally beloved in Baltimore. Built Bar has come back even better. The protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, well, now it has even more flavors that make it taste even better than it already did. They've got new flavors like caramel brownie, lemon almond cheesecake, and carrot cake. That kind of stuff, you know, you start thinking about fall flavors, those fit right there for Built Bar. They've still got the 12 original flavors like peanut butter, mint brownie, and toffee almond, but the bar's still covered 100% in chocolate, soft and easy to chew. But they don't just taste great, they're also good for you. That's the best part about Built Bar as well. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great for a keto diet as well. You talk about the peanut butter bar, it's got 19 grams of protein and just 180 calories while only 5 grams of sugar. This bar is delicious and good for you as well. So go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. So today we continue our look at the top 10 moves the Orioles made in the last decade from 2010 to 2019. Yesterday it was number 10, started the list with the Orioles claiming Steve Pierce off of waivers from the Yankees. And today, another move that the Orioles made in 2012. It was June 5th of 2012 when the Orioles made what looked to be a kind of a minor move. They signed outfielder Nate McClouth to a minor league contract. Now, McClouth, back in 2012, you know, he was 30 years old, and it seemed like his best years in Major League Baseball were, you know, most likely behind him. He had, you know, made it to the All-Star game and won a gold glove with the Pirates in 2008, really still went down when it was all said and done as his best major league season. And he had spent all that time with Pittsburgh from 2005 until 2009, and then was traded to Atlanta at the deadline in 2009 to make a playoff run with the Braves that year. And of course, that was a big trade that the Pirates ended up getting Gorkys Hernandez and Jeff Locke, a couple of you know, major leaguers who didn't make much of a splash. But they also got Charlie Morton in that deal. And obviously, we know how well Morton's career has gone. Of course, him pitching very well for the Rays in the postseason and the World Series this year. And he's now a starting pitching free agent. But McClouth went to Atlanta and, you know, with the Braves had a couple of okay years, but really, you know, he was productive down the stretch in 2009 after the trade, but 2010, 2011 didn't go so hot, and Atlanta let him go, and the Pirates signed him back that offseason after 2011, trying to bring McClouth back to the team, and it did not go well once again for Nate McClouth in Pittsburgh in 2012, 34 games, 62 plate appearances. He hit just 140. He was 8 for 57 at the dish, and the Pirates DFA'd him. Nobody claimed him on waivers. So after a really good career early, he was a free agent, and the Orioles, you know, they were looking for some outfield depth. Nolan Reimold, who they were counting on being their left fielder in 2012, he was once again on the injured list and was looking to pretty much be out for the rest of that 2012 season. So they needed at least some depth at that left field position in the minors. And, you know, we're trying out guys like Xavier Avery and Endy Chavez, but those guys really weren't producing enough at the plate. So the Orioles took a flyer on Nate McClouth, signed him to a minor league deal. And, of course, they sent him to AAA Norfolk first just to see how he'd do. And he was solid in Norfolk, played 47 games for the Tides through June and July, ended up hitting .244 with a .325 on base. But the big number for him was the 10 home runs in those 47 games. And I know it's against AAA pitching, but he'd had a 20-homer season in 2009. Since then, the power numbers had been way, way down in the 2 years after that. So the 10 home runs was a good sign, and the Orioles called him up and basically said, hey, you're going to play left field for us. We're going to see how this goes. If it doesn't work out, could have DFA'd him again and looked for somebody else in the trade market, you know, after bringing him up in August, still chance to make a deal at the non-waiver deadline. But McLouth comes up on August 4th of 2012, and his first game gets a start, goes 2-for-4, has a double, and an Orioles 4-0 win over the Rays. I don't know if it was him doing this, but the Orioles ended up winning the first six games he played in. They went on a 9-1 stretch in games he played in his first 10 games as an Oriole. And it kind of sparked this team a little bit in August. Now, his numbers weren't fantastic early, but he started to pick it up with the bat. And, you know, all of a sudden by late August, he was the Orioles' everyday left fielder. September continued to hit, really started to heat up in September, and became the Orioles' leadoff man and everyday left fielder for a team that went to the playoffs. And McLouth, you know, we obviously know how the postseason went for him, and we feel like he should have a home run, and felt like that ball hit the foul pole in Game 5 of the ALDS at Yankee Stadium. But that is obviously a long conversation for another day. But he was good in the postseason. You know, he went 1-for-4 with a couple RBIs in the wild card game and the win over Texas. And then in that 5-game ALDS, you know, he was officially 7-for-22. That's a .318 batting average. He had one home run that they counted, one double, three RBIs. And really, you know, we felt like should have had two home runs in that series and even up those numbers. He was really, really good in the postseason. And, you know, you look at just the regular season numbers overall for him in Baltimore, 55 games with the Orioles, .268 average, .342 on base, seven homers and 12 doubles for McLouth, who also stole 12 bases as well, kind of gave the Orioles a little bit of that running element that they didn't really have as much of on that 2012 team. And he was great, put him in the leadoff spot, left-handed bat, a veteran presence, you know, at age 30 with a younger team there that was really tasting success for the first time. And it was a great addition by Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter to get McLouth in there, obviously on a cheap minor league deal, and really sparked, you know, as I said, they won 9 of 10 after they called him up. 6 in a row and 9 of 10, and really sparked this team to that playoff run in 2012. And he was such an important part of it, and you know, he had some walk-off hits, some big swings, and Orioles fans loved him. The clubhouse loved him. He's been beloved everywhere he went, you know, whether it was Pittsburgh, Atlanta, Baltimore, and then, you know, finishing his career 2014 with the Nationals. But he was great for the Orioles, and it was a great pairing. And then, of course, he was a free agent, but the Orioles said, you know, that was an amazing pickup, and they brought him back in 2013, ended up bringing him back on another one-year deal. And, you know, the Orioles were obviously a little disappointing in 2013. You know, they won 85 games, but it wasn't enough to get to the postseason. But McLouth was solid that year. Now, he wasn't as good as he was down the stretch in 2012, but he was an everyday outfielder for the Orioles, everyday left fielder in 2013. He played 146 games, hit .258 with a .329 on base. He hit 12 homers, 31 doubles, and he stole 30 bases. So he was a really good addition in that time for the Orioles. But, you know, it seemed like time to let him go. They didn't bring him back. You know, obviously they replaced him with Nelson Cruz in that left field spot, and that really worked out for the Orioles in 2014. I would have loved to see him maybe stick around for a little longer, but in hindsight, you look at it, he does sign with the Nationals for 2014, ends up playing in 79 games, only hits .173, power goes away, and the Nationals, you know, got rid of him, and 2014 was his last year in the big league. So the Orioles really got the most out of him at the end of his career, and that was kind of it for McLouth. But love those 2 years for him in an Orioles uniform, and that's why he comes in at number 9 on our ranking, the Orioles' top 10 transactions of the last decade. And I know Orioles fans love Nate McLouth, and I do too. And what a good, just the Orioles, you know, they went out and got so many guys that year who kind of were very cheap options, who played really above their skill level or fit perfectly. You know, you put in the Lou Forts, the Omar Quintanillas, the Joe Saunders of the world, you know, even guys like Jim Tomei, who are Hall of Famers, but, you know, at the end of their career, and getting him pretty cheap, and putting him in that clubhouse along with McLouth to be veteran leaders on that team. Just so many pieces came together, and McLouth ended up, you know, being a minor league contract in the middle of the year that became one of the bigger pieces on that 2012 team. He was really the best hitter in that postseason. He was the leadoff guy and played great defense, stole bases, and was a huge part of the Orioles for a year and a half. And that's why, you know, despite only playing, you know, you look at it in total, you know, he only played 201 games in an Oriole uniform, ended up being a 261 hitter with the Orioles. And again, just, you know, if you combine it together, about a season and a half. But it was enough for McLouth to go down in Orioles lore. He'll always be remembered as a big part of that great 2012 team. And that's why he slots in at number 9 on our list. But if you're liking the list that we're doing here, we're going to continue it over the next few weeks. We got the top 8 remaining. We've still got some really good moves to talk about here on the pod. But coming up tomorrow, we'll be back with you on Thursday. I actually have an exciting conversation coming up on Thursday. We mentioned that we would get a little deeper into the two prospects that the Orioles received in return from the Braves for Tommy Malone. We're going to talk about one of them tomorrow. That one is going to be Greg Cullen. He is the really the bat-first middle infield that the Orioles got from the Braves in the deal. Of course, they got two middle infielders, Cullen and A.J. Graffinino. But Cullen really the hitter of the two, Graffinino more of the fielder. Cullen not the ranked prospect, but he might have a higher ceiling, at least with the bat. He was a stud in college. He played at Niagara University, a smaller Division I program, but he led NCAA in batting in his final year, or was one of the top hitters in NCAA in batting in his final year. So you know what? We're going to talk to his college coach on the podcast tomorrow. So Rob McCoy, the head coach of the Niagara Purple Eagles baseball program, will join us on the pod tomorrow. We will talk about Greg Cullen, his fantastic college career in the MAAC, and what he can bring to the Orioles organization, and why he might be an underrated prospect that could continue to make his way through the system starting in 2021. So that's coming up tomorrow. But if you're looking forward to that and you're liking what you're hearing, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you listen to this podcast. Give us a rating and a review if you can as well. It really helps out the pod. But again, we'll be back with you tomorrow with Rob McCoy, head coach of Niagara Baseball, to talk about the newest Oriole prospect, Greg Cullen. And until then, though, this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.